Oh, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I hope everybody had a great Easter weekend and a long weekend if you did manage to take that. And I hope everyone's looking forward to, who knows, maybe a little bit more excitement in the markets that we follow, even in the precious metals. But you know what I have to say? It's looking like it might be another slow week. But what I am going to do right now, chatting with Chris Temple, is first start off talking about the crude oil market, because crude is up again, up over $1.50, trading at just above $65.50 per barrel. And this is a continuation of this climb that crude has been on ever since that bottom right around or right at Christmas time. Chris, what do you have to say about, A, what's driven this oil rally and how much further it potentially could go?
Well, Corey, oil has primarily been a story of supply or the lack of any major growth in supply and even supply worries, more so than it's been a positive demand story. I think that there are still those, and I'm in this camp a little bit, who question the durability of this rally if we don't see a meaningful rebound in the economy globally, not so much in the U.S., where we may end up with a better Q1 GDP number than had been previously thought, but still a bit slower than last year's pace. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But this added boost to oil, of course, today, is due to the U.S. stating that the exceptions and, you know, the wiggle room for certain countries to get out from under any consequences of complying with the sanctions against Iran is over. And so you've got the neoconservatives within the Trump administration who he is allowing to flourish. That's a very bad thing. And they are wanting to beat the war drums against Iran anew. So whereas the price didn't respond positively as much last year, late in the year when the Iran sanctions were put back in because there were several exemptions granted, now the U.S. is saying that those exemptions are over with, everybody's got to comply or be punished. So that's the biggest reason why things are up, plus, of course, the continued lack of output from Venezuela, because that country's a basket case. And between the two of those things, and even along the way, the Saudis tightening up supplies a little bit, we're seeing this upward move. And it's interesting because, on the one hand, the neoconservatives are doing the bidding for countries like Saudi Arabia. President Trump certainly is, by keeping the U.S. as at least a silent partner in the Saudi so-called war. More people call it a genocide in Yemen. But all of a sudden, Saudi Arabia is not returning the favor to Trump, who wants low oil and therefore low gasoline prices. So things are going the other direction. Saudi Arabia wants a higher price still, because they're on a hook for a lot of social spending, a lot of promises. They don't want to upset the apple cart at home. So, you know, we could see prices continue to rise as speculators jump on this momentum. And despite, which is the interesting part of this, despite still the concerns that linger over weak economic growth. So this is, again, more of a supply issue.
Oil, I find so interesting because there are so many different governments that seem to be able to tinker with their supply or with their production and cause the oil price to at least have some short-term moves, more so than I think a lot of other commodities, because of what OPEC has and even how now this Iran issue or deal is coming into the factor. But then when you move aside and look at how it can be the barometer for economic growth, or at least some sort of barometer for growth, do you think that as oil right now is kind of in the middle of this wide range that it has been in for well over a year now, do you think there is a general equilibrium for those longer term traders to maybe range trade it, understanding that there is still slow economic growth, but it's not booming economic growth? So hard to play the upper end, but then also hard to play a major collapse in the price?
Yeah, I think that we're in a place, Corey, give or take a few bucks from around where we're at right now, where you've got a reasonable price, where no one's going to get too upset. The better companies can still make money. And the interesting thing to watch is going to be what rising gasoline prices do to the official inflation readings and more so to consumer sentiment. President Trump is wisely concerned about things like the Federal Reserve and now energy prices, because he knows that no matter which of the Democrat Party candidates he faces next year, it's going to be a tough battle, and he doesn't want any negatives any more than he might have already. And one of those things would be if, thanks to, in part, his warmongering administration, which is contrary to what he ran on, being responsible for the price of gasoline being the highest it's been in a few years, that's not going to help them. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I think that I don't know that you can play from this level a big move up or down near term in the oil price right now. I think, as I've said before, that the opportunities are with a lot of energy stocks, which have lagged this move all along, and still are in many respects. There's one particular service company that I've just been hysterically pounding the table on among my recommended list holdings. You know, the stock price has not done well over the last year or two, but from its bottom at the end of toward the end of last year, it is up about 30 or 35%. I think it's got way much farther to go. So if you pick your companies carefully, I think that there's a lot of catching up to do with some of them. When you come to grips with the fact, as I have, that the downside risk for oil now is very limited, even if we still have a weak global economy, and that will kind of hang around where we're at.
So when it comes to some of the stocks, it's what I wanted to talk about, and you even outlined it there. The stocks have generally lagged this oil price move higher, especially on this last run in the last about 3 to 4 months. Is there a general sweet spot that you think investors could eye and diversify their portfolio to take advantage of this move in oil, or is it just very much a stock-specific type of market?
It's mostly a stock-specific thing. I still like the pipeline companies, the big master limited partnership space, and the similar companies that are involved in the infrastructure and delivery of oil and natural gas products. Corey, the upper tier ones have already moved nicely. Now it's kind of like the story, you know, that gold investors look at over the years. If you get a big move, the majors tend to move quick. And then when people are convinced that the move is durable, then they go down the pecking order and look at the smaller companies, the ones that got left behind. That's where we're at now with the pipeline companies. The big names, happily, a couple of them that I've recommended have already moved a lot, but some of them aren't. And I'm about to add a couple of those lower tier ones to my list that have got fundamentals every bit as good or better than the big names, but haven't really been picked over yet.
All right, Chris, let's move over to the U.S. dollar, because the U.S. dollar has continued to climb and is coming very close to that recent high that it put in. The dollar currently at about 97.32 and that recent peak about 97.67. The argument can be made that, especially when you're judging on the dollar index, that there is still just so much weakness out of Europe. We even saw weak data out of Germany last week that just leads more and more investors into the U.S. dollar. I know there's still a lot of dollar bears out there, but all the picture that I see is kind of the path of least resistance, still grinding higher for the dollar. Where do you stand?
Well, look, I've said more than once that the Federal Reserve does not want a stronger dollar. Jay Powell has actually mentioned things like what had been a weaker China market. It's had a big rally this year, but that's suspect now. He's called out the copper price in the recent past. And a lot of that is a consequence of the Fed being tighter in relative terms than all the other central banks. And that is one of the main things that has put upward pressure on the U.S. currency. And I think that the Fed, if it, you know, would have been forthcoming with what its expectations were after two FOMC meetings in a row of surprising the markets to the dovish side, it would have thought that it would have broken the back of this strong dollar, but it hasn't gotten any traction where the dollar is concerned out of swinging so sharply this year to the dovish direction. And it's because there are bigger problems still elsewhere. It's because there are still people that are, at least as a hedge, in case the global economy does continue to unravel or we don't get a good deal on trade or any deal on trade, there are people that are still keeping a bid within the U.S. dollar. And without question, near term, if you were going to see a big direction one way or the other, it would be that the dollar breaks higher out above finally this resistance level, which has been pretty intractable around 97.5 or so on a U.S. dollar index. It's knocked on that door several times over the last several months. It'll pull back. Each time it pulls back, it's shallower. And so people that just look at the technical setup, if you didn't look at anything else, virtually any technician that looks at a dollar chart would tell you that the likelihood is that it would break higher. And that's not going to do any of the risk assets any good at all.
Now, do you think if we do get a break higher in the dollar, at least from a technical standpoint, there is quite a bit of air for the dollar to run up at least a few points higher, closing in on 100? Do you see that move happening quickly if, again, we do get that break higher?
It probably would, because you've had such a long setup to a technical breakout like this that I think that the momentum chasers among currency traders would be afraid of being left behind or being on the wrong side. And the risk and the likelihood are that another spurt or another leg higher would happen in fairly short order.
Do you think a move strongly higher by the dollar would be enough or even more ammo for the Fed to maybe push in some sort of a rate cut this year?
They want to avoid that, Corey. They really don't want to get put in that position. I've commented a few times in the recent past, we've talked about it, that it would be very interesting to see if that did scare the Fed into making a move sooner rather than later. It would certainly get the attention of the White House. It would get the attention of markets and market commentators. And particularly if you saw that move in the dollar, if it comes about, start to undermine the U.S. stock market anew and add to weakness in foreign stock markets and to the renewed weakness in commodities. You know, oil is not as much of a barometer right now, I don't think, of the global economy, because it is more of a supply and geopolitical story. Copper was trying to reassert itself recently, and it failed. When it tried to get up above $3, it couldn't do it. Now it's been eroding a little bit again. If you had a breakout in the dollar, that would annihilate copper and most of the other industrial commodities, most likely, and that would get the Fed's attention anew. So it'd be very entertaining to see how long the Fed waited before it at least tried to jawbone the dollar back down, if not enact a rate cut.
Okay. And then one final market, just a quick comment on yields. The 10-year has been, again, climbing after hitting a low. Who knows how long of a low that will hold to be, but a low back in the tail end of March. The 10-year sitting right around, let's say, 2.5, 2.6%, right in that range. Still very much off of its highs of 3.25%. What do you think about where treasuries have gone and now yields bouncing back a little bit, but no way reasserting themselves?
Well, the 2.6% level, Corey, has been a major technical level for the last couple of years or so, both on the way up. It was resistance for a while. It got above that, and then it was support on the way down until we broke that here in the recent past. We would actually tumble below 2.4% for a while on a 10-year, but now we're back here. And that's going to be interesting to watch, too. A lot of it's going to depend on the news. You can technically make a case for the 10-year note to get back to a range of 2.6 to 2.8% that it was in for a little while before it broke down. And that's really a coin toss. It's going to depend on any decent outcome from trade talks and so forth. If you had that, and if you have, at least for a little while, an attempt on the part of the stock market to have one last hurrah and maybe make some new all-time highs before it finally rolls over longer term, then that would pull yields higher. But again, that's a coin toss right now. And I actually addressed this in a new issue I sent out last week, where I've got people who miss being able to get my recommendations to play both the long and the short side on treasuries, which most of the time I've been pretty good at. I missed the big bullish move in treasuries from the 3.25% level all the way to where we were at. And right now, I just think that as far as trying to bet one way or the other on treasuries, it's uninvestable. If you're looking 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road, and you're especially a deflationist and you believe that we're all going to go the way of Japan, then yeah, longer term, you'd want to buy treasuries now after the prices have pulled back and the yields have moved back up. But keep in mind that there's a 50-50 chance that in the near term, you're going to lose on that trade before it turns into a winner. So I'm kind of sitting on my hands. I'd rather, as I've said, and I'm going to be adding to these positions for my members, I'd rather find interest rate sensitive stocks that I've got a lot more confidence in long term, that I think are good values and pay good dividends. I'd sooner do that at this point than I would just rush into treasuries.
All right, Chris, good chatting with you. I appreciate taking some time on this Easter Monday to break down at least some of these markets. While they are within their ranges, still interesting to see the potential of breakouts and rebounds in some of these sectors. Chris, good chatting with you. If anybody wants Chris and I to look at any certain sectors, please always comment, or even better, email me, fleck@kereport.com. Chris, have a great rest of your day.